Brew Strong is brought to you by morebeer.com, where a man can brew like a man.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. Here we are with Brew Strong. It's me, Jamil Zainashev, and my good buddy and partner, John The Rock Palmer.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? You doing, Jay-Z?
I'm doing fine. I don't think everybody else could answer, because they're, you know...
Oh, that's true.
It's like radio, and it's one way, so... If you ask them how, I guess we shouldn't pause and wonder how they're doing. But we'll find out how they're doing at this upcoming conference, huh? National conference coming this week. Technically starts Thursday, but you know, all the pre-party stuff, the BN Army bus tour is like several buses rolling around to special spots that Justin set up. That's going to be a heck of a time. And capped off by the 4th anniversary party, Brewing Network anniversary party. It's going to be Wednesday, June 17th, 7 p.m. If you're on the bus tour, it's going to take you there, and it's going to be at the Linden Street Brewery. Starts at 7, goes till I think about 11 o'clock, and it is going to be a heck of a time. I've been to a couple of these BN parties in the past. They're always a great time. Quite impressive. There's going to be a lot of beer there. There's even going to be some homebrew beer from the Brewcasters. So you'll be able to taste the beers that we brew, and you can then say how crappy they are, and you brew better beer than we do. So there you go. But that's going to be a world of fun. And then the Brewing Network is doing shows from the NHC, from the homebrew conference, right there in the hospitality suite. They're going to do a Sunday session show. We're going to do the Jamil Show, Can You Brew It? And then we're going to do a Brew Strong episode there as well. And that's going to be Saturday at the conference. Right there in the hospitality suite, I think it's, 5:30 to 6:30. And we are going to have a wild old time doing our Q&A format, which you guys seem to really enjoy the last Q&A show we did. So we're going to go ahead and do it live there. It's going to be an awesome time.
And that'll be a good time, yeah.
To top it off, at Club Night, More Beer is giving away a sculpture with the Brewing Network. So if you're a donor for the Brewing Network, you get on there, go to the homepage, and there's a donate button. For as little as $2 a month, you're in all the raffles. Or you can just donate and get some tickets. But... you donate, you got to get your donation in by Thursday, June 18th at midnight, because that's when they're going to count everybody that's in on this raffle. And then Friday night at Club Night is the raffle for the More Beer sculpture. You can go to the www.thebrewingnetwork.com/ontap for details about this and many other great things happening in the Brewing Network. Especially coming up with this conference, we're going to have a load of fun. John, you're going to be there. I'm going to be there.
Yep. I'll be there.
You know, all the whole crew's going to be there. You see all your favorites and hang out with us and have some beers. And if you want your boobies signed, John is happy to do that for you. He'll bring an extra.
As long as your wife doesn't mind. Yeah.
What's she got to do with it? She mind that you're signing my boobies?
No, I mean, whoever wants me to sign their wife's boobies, I mean, I'm happy to. Yeah.
I think it's pretty much dudes that would have you signing their boobies.
Oh.
You know, homebrew helps build the chest in interesting ways.
A little male bonding there, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you didn't think their wives would want you to sign. Please. Come on, John. Remember what kind of books you write. You know?
That's true, yeah.
Wrong kind of books. You want to get into... You want to get the women asking for you to sign, then that's a whole different type of book you need to write. Otherwise, you got the dudes. You got the dudes there for the signing. Well,
there we go. The more the merrier. Okay.
All right. So you're happy with that now? Can we start the show? Are you through playing around?
Almost.
All right. Okay.
But go ahead. All right. Don't wait on me.
We're gonna talk lagering today. And not necessarily making lager beers, but that'll be a part of it. We want to talk about lagering, the aging part. So you've made a beer, and you want to take advantage of what this thing, you know, called lagering is. You hear people talking about lagering their beers or aging their beers, and that's somehow making them better, right? So, John, why don't you start us off? What is lagering? Why do you do it? What is it, and what can you expect from it?
Okay. Well, lagering comes from the German word lagern, which means to store. So we're talking about storing the beer. And you may have heard that, you know, the purpose of lagering is to, you know, get the beer cold and get the yeast to, you know, eat a lot of the, you know, different byproducts and so on, and really clean up the beer. Well, that's not quite true, because when you brew lager beer, it's not that different from brewing an ale beer. It's just done at a cooler temperature, but the yeast are still doing their, you know, their early fermentation, producing byproducts, and then doing their late fermentation, cleaning up of byproducts. That all takes place during fermentation, whether you're doing a lager beer fermentation or an ale beer fermentation. What makes lagering different is that you have a step where you purposely cold condition the beer and cold age it, dropping it down near, say, 30, you know, 32 or 30 degrees near zero C, and that activity is to drive clarification. And so when you brew a lager beer, you're essentially doing two steps. You're doing a cooler fermentation overall than you do for ales, but then you do a cold conditioning step, which is to drive clarification. And we'll talk about how that clarification works a little later. I think we also should talk about, you know, what are some of these differences between lager brewing and ale brewing, just to kind of set the stage, mm-hmm. Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even though there are differences between the two, you can lager an ale, right? It's,
yeah.
Lagering is not, even though you brewed a beer with ale yeast, doesn't mean you can't lager it. Lagering is a step or a process that is independent of that.
That's right.
it's still possible, just like carbonation. You can carbonate both beers, you can both lager both of them. Probably the main thing between a lager fermentation and ale fermentation, lager fermentations happen at a cooler temperature, tend to be a different type of yeast, and the whole purpose is to get kind of a cleaner profile, less esters in the final beer, to, you know, that clean taste. And we're talking about clean, that's not a total lack of esters, but a reduced or a different type, yeah, of esters, right? Because if it
that's
was
right.
totally clean, if none of that yeast byproduct from fermentation was there, the beer would taste horrible. It wouldn't taste, yeah, like beer, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't taste like beer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we're brewing the real difference between brewing a lager beer and brewing an ale beer is that you are purposely shifting the fermentation temperature downwards to suppress ester formation.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have less to clean up and less ester character in the beer afterwards. Otherwise, it's very, very, very similar to an ale beer.
Well, there's a few things you do in order to suppress that ester formation. One is, you know, yeast strain selection, but also, you know, getting a low temperature of your mm-hmm. wort before you pitch your yeast, and pitching an appropriate amount of yeast for most beers. The rule of thumb is always, you know, a million cells of yeast per degree Plato per milliwort And, you know, actually for ales, it should be a little lower, you know, maybe 750,000. And for lagers, it's about double that, or 1.5 million. So not 1 and 2, but 750,000. And that's right. What the pitching rate calculator used. And that's what most of the yeast manufacturers are talking when they're talking repitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a lower temperature. And it's important to have that lower initial temperature because, you know, the precursors for things like diacetyl are created, you know, the higher the initial temperature in the earlier stages of fermentation, the higher the precursors for something like diacetyl, and the higher amounts of diacetyl you have at the end that the yeast is going to need to clean up. So if you start at a lower temperature, you know, you'll suppress those things. One of the things that some commercial breweries do when using lager yeast is they ferment them under CO2 pressure, and CO2 pressure will also suppress formation of esters. It suppresses fermentation activity. So,
right.
You know, there's multiple ways to kind of achieve this, but the important thing is, you know, proper pitching rates. You don't want to pitch too much. You over pitch, you end up with leftover acetaldehyde. In your beer. Acetaldehyde is an intermediary product as they're making ethanol. And what happens is if you pitch too much, it's not going to reabsorb that acetaldehyde and convert it over to ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, proper pitching rates, oxygenation, you know, low temperatures. I like to, you know, start out at, say, 44 degrees Fahrenheit. Pitch my yeast, let it free rise up to 50 degrees over the first day or two, and then hold it steady at 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees C through to the end, and wait for everything to completely finish, give it another day or two, and then, you know, it's all clean. Or you can ramp up towards the end to give the yeast a little more activity, and they will help. That will help reduce diacetyl and acetaldehyde and things like that. But once I get to that point, once I've done my fermentation, it's complete, and that's for a lager or an ale, and I'm at that stage, that's when I need to get into this cold conditioning or this lagering phase, right?
Right. Yeah, and it all comes back to, you know, we want to produce a beer with a less estery character, and if you think about ale brewing, you know, we've talked and you've talked on the Jamil show on, you know, brewing different styles. You know, one way you suppress ester formation is to use a higher pitching rate, because a higher pitching rate will put less stress on the yeast than a low pitching rate.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about the 1.5 times, you know, as much yeast, twice as much yeast pitching rate for lager brewing as ale brewing. If we were to put twice as much yeast in as normal and ferment in ale temperature, we'd have a yeast orgy going on. There, you know, there'd be such rapid fermentation that we would get lots of ester formation and lots of acetaldehyde formation.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do then, and this is the whole theory of lagering, is you cool that beer and cool that fermentation to a cooler primary fermentation temperature, like you stated, you know, 45 to 50 degrees, and conduct the fermentation at that lower temperature. Now you have lots of yeast to ferment the wort, but they're doing it more slowly, and it helps you suppress these byproducts in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can let it, as you said, you can let it ramp up to a diacetyl rest at the end and make sure everything's nice and clean. So I guess I've just repeated everything you said, but
no.
Slightly different spin on it.
No, I think that's important to recap. And you know, it's all about yeast growth. You do need some growth in the beer, and that's what develops those flavors that are critical to it tasting like beer. If you just took ethanol and poured it into, you know, some malt, water, and carbonate, it's not going to taste like beer. It'd be very clean, but it would not taste like beer. So you need that character in there. Now, if you're under pitching or even pitching the right amount, and you're putting a lot of oxygen in, that can actually be a problem in that you can, again, get too much growth. And too much growth is one of the things you want to avoid. Not, you know, when those little cells stress themselves out and you know, the you end up with the thin-walled yeast that are under stress, and you get those hot alcohols, or you know, there's a lot of things you need to be careful of, and it's kind of a balancing act. And I guess the reason why we're kind of going over this and why this is so important, you know, you might say, well, this, you know, you're just saying this has nothing to do with your ability to lager a beer. You know, you could lager anything, right? The reason we're going over this is that lagering is not going to reduce these compounds. You know, if you have a bunch of diacetyl, if you have a huge amount of esters or hot alcohols, lagering isn't necessarily going to reduce those compounds down. The yeast are doing very little at these low temperatures, at 32F or 0C. The yeast are not having a whole lot of activity, and that's not the major function of lagering. So if you're going into lagering with a nasty tasting beer, it's going to come out of lagering as a nasty tasting beer a lot of times. It's
right.
Really, it's a miracle if it improves a whole lot. You know, all those things dropping mm-hmm. out and all that. Well, John, why don't we take a short break? And when we come back, let's get into some of those. Let's get more specific about, you know, temperature reduction down to that 0C level, and you know, whether you need to do it fast or slow, or whether it matters, and then the kind of things we can expect to happen during lagering period. Okay, back after this.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
And the new tap handle?
$5 instead of $13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of $25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated. Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go.
You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Catherine the Great Imperial Stout, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio.
Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and happy hour all day Mondays. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub, where you'll feel at home.
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, you know what's coming up?
What's that?
The 22nd Annual Southern California Regional Homebrew Championship. Inland Empire Brewers have put that on each year. And, you know, if you are a BN Army listener, you get $1 off. You just you go to the forum under beer events, and you can download a coupon there. Saves you $1 off of each entry. And that's happening July 25th. 2009 at Main Street Brewery in Corona, California. And you can drop your entries at More Beer in Riverside or Concord, and Culver City Homebrew Supply, Home Beer Wine, Cheese Making Shop, a couple other places. The deadline's going to be July 11th at noon. And you can visit www.hopheads.com for more info on that. And again, you can get the coupon in the forum, the BN forum. Just go to the BN forum and look under there, under beer events, $1 off per entry for BN Army listeners. Pretty cool.
It's a good competition.
Yeah. Let's see what, get some feedback on your beers. Maybe some of your Kenya Brewit clone attempts. Got some good recipes in there. Got some really exciting ones coming up, too. So I'm really digging that show.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying that show, too.
Yeah. So, and actually, I'm going to have some beer. I think I'm going to bring my Obsidian Stout clone, and I'm going to bring that, and a couple others. Going to bring that down there to the National Homebrew Conference, and you guys get a chance to taste it. I know John's bringing up a keg of you brewed
West
a Red
Coast
Rocket.
Blaster. Yeah.
Oh, the West Coast Blaster? Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. That's going to, well, not sweet, hoppy.
Yes. it's quite bitter, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
I really like the Amber Ale style.
That, I do too.
And like a red nectar from Firestone Nectar Ales. Mm-hmm. The red, it's always been one of my favorite beers.
Yeah, it's a good session drinking beer. You know, all those mm-hmm. reds, really nice balance overall in many different ways. All right, mm-hmm. let's see here. We were talking about lagers, and we're talking about we kind of went over to fermentation, why it's important to have a clean fermentation because it's not really going to absorb things. And right. All right, so I've finished my lager fermentation, and my beer is sitting at 50, or maybe I did a diacetyl rest at the end, and it's
60
Fahrenheit. And what do I do now? How do I begin the lager? Do I just take that fermenter and make it colder, or what do I do? What's my steps and why?
Well, if you've done your fermentation right. If you've gotten all of your yeast activity done during the fermentation step, you can crash cool it. You can just take that thing and set it right in the freezer and drop it down to 30 as fast as you please. Because, like I've said, the real purpose of this cold conditioning is to drop the yeast and also drop haze. Because we're looking for real clarity in a lager beer. When there wasn't, and I'm talking maybe 25 years ago, when there wasn't as good an understanding of what the purpose of lagering was, and you know how to consistently produce a good clean lager beer, people often started lagering too soon. They would wait 1 week you know, for the fermentation, and then start slowly decreasing the temperature, mm-hmm. you know, a few degrees a day to get that beer cold. And because they were trying to avoid shock in the yeast, they were trying to keep the yeast working longer. Mm-hmm. And as you said, Jamil, it's, you know, really it's better to start your fermentation cold and let that fermentation warm up through its cycle. And you will get all of that conditioning done ahead of time before you go to cold conditioning. Mm-hmm. So it depends on, you know, it depends on how you started that beer as to really which method of lagering you need to look at. If you started warm and then got colder during primary fermentation, then you need to ease it into the lagering stage also. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not sure that you've gotten all your fermentation done, you know, in terms of conditioning and flavor cleanup, you probably should get a wine thief and taste the beer. You know, does it taste like it's done or mm-hmm. nearly done? Mm-hmm. Or does it taste, you know, do you taste diacyl, do you taste acetaldehyde, right. That sort of thing.
Well, and what I like to do is, you know, again, let it ferment out until I see no activity, airlock not moving at all. And then just let it sit for another day or two. Not going to hurt anything at fermentation temperatures.
Right.
And then I'm pretty sure the yeast have done what they're going to do. The yeast do what they do best at warmer temperatures. They're more active. They're looking for food. They're scavenging diacetyl and things like that that they can utilize. And that's how they clean it up. If you chill them down, they're like, well, oh, time to go to sleep. Forget it. Let's go. And they put the brakes on that. So you might get a little bit of activity, but I've not been one to slowly reduce the temperature. I just put it, you know, I keg it. I get it off the yeast.
Yeah.
I put it in a keg, and I stick it in the cold fridge and just let it sit there. And
that's good.
Well, and here's one question for you. Let's say I overdo it. Let's say I put that beer in the freezer. I want to chill it down rapidly, and I end up accidentally freezing the beer. Is that going to cause a problem?
If you're going to force carbonate, no, it doesn't cause any problem at all. You've probably, you know, dropped all your yeast and really put them out of commission. But if you're going to force carbonate, probably not a big issue at all. As we said, the fermentation really aspect of it should really be done. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to bottle condition that lager, or if you're going to bottle that beer and carbonate it in the bottle, you're going to want to add more yeast when you go to bottling.
Right. And what you do there is you need about 20 million cells or 20 billion cells per 5-gallon batch or 20-liter batch. So about a billion per liter of beer. So mm-hmm. that'd be like a fifth of a White Labs or a Y yeast package, or a gram of dry yeast.
Yeah. You can dump in a whole tube, or, you know, put in a whole packet if you want. Mm-hmm. But really all you're doing at this point is you're adding enough yeast, and they should be active yeast. You know, you want them to be, you know, not straight from the refrigerator into the cold beer. You want them to be awake and added to a really warm beer at this point. Let that lager come back up to, you know, 60 degrees, 15 C. And then they will carbonate that beer. You won't lose any lager flavor. You won't get any, you know, radical ester formation that's going to change the lager character of your beer at this point, because they're only fermenting a small proportion of priming sugar. Mm-hmm. So that's a common question I get is, you know, should I, when I bottle a lager beer, do I need to keep it cold? No. Let it warm up to room temp and let that carbonation happen. Once it's carbonated, then you can cool it back down, put it in the fridge and so on, and mm-hmm. it's good to go. It's like, you know, it's like ale beer at that point.
So I would say one thing on freezing, if you do have a fairly high yeast load in that beer, if the yeast hasn't flocculated well, you know, you could end up, and you're actually getting formation of ice crystals, you could freeze some of those cells. They could end up...
Autolyze.
Yeah, and that could, you know, if you've got a lot of yeast in it, that could really kind of affect the flavor, so you want to kind of be careful of that. And what about like a permanent haze? I've heard that if you freeze a beer... the protein and tannin will form a complex that, that just won't go back into solution when it warms up and could be a permanent haze from freezing.
I hadn't heard that. Maybe that does occur. But usually, you know, the colder you can get the beer, the more you can get the protein and polyphenol haze to coagulate and settle out. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. you know, maybe if it freezes really fast, you know, there's no time for it to settle, and maybe it ends up hanging around. But mm-hmm. you should be able to get those hazes to settle during the lagering period.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's part of the process is the colder temperatures make the protein tannin complexes increase in size, and then they drop out, right?
Right, right. That's what you're trying to encourage with the colder temperature.
And essentially that's what you're trying to encourage with finings, is making a larger
clump,
yeah. a flock of what it might be, increase that weight. And then it tends to drop out a little easier.
Right, right. That's the way fine engines work. Is they provide, you know, chemical or molecular bonding sites to help these to form a complex between proteins and polyphenols, and help that particle take on enough mass to actually start settling out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so we're dropping the temperature, and if you're lagering for a long period of time, you might end up needing to add more yeast back for your carbonation if you're bottle conditioning. But and again, you can add more yeast than you need, but you don't want to overdo it, because again, if the beer is going to sit in those bottles for a long period of time. Too much yeast can also be a bit of an issue. The rate that I recommend is the same rate that Sierra Nevada uses on theirs, and I think they do a beautiful job. You know, you get that very light dusting across the bottle, and that's what they carbonate with, and that's with no yeast left in there at all. They filter it all out and then add their yeast back. So I think at that kind of range, you should be good. Now, what about these the flavor development? You know, some flavors do change during this lagering period. I mean, the beer does seem to get a little cleaner. Now, what's happening? Why is the flavor changing? Why is the beer less harsh after a month or 2 months of sitting in a keg at 32 degrees? What's going on there, John?
Well, it goes back to the clarification. The polyphenols, which can provide, you know, have a certain astringency, you know, if they're high enough, but you know, these contribute some mouthfeel. They contribute a little bit of bitterness. You get you know, polyphenols both from hops and from the malts, and so these colder temperatures encourage these polyphenols and so on to complex and settle out, and that really does improve the mouthfeel and the overall flavor of the beer, because you've reduced some of the harshness that would otherwise be present. There are, you know, you can get some esterification of fusels if you have some. There are other, you know, chemical reactions going on. And yeast, and some small degree of yeast activity going on, but a lot of it, the main difference that you'll taste in the beer is going to be a reduction in the polyphenol load in the beer.
Mm-hmm. So you'll taste less load in the beer. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So and you also mentioned the esterification of certain fusel alcohol. So that's kind of the hot and solventy and other alcohols. Now, I know a lot of people are looking at that. Esterification sounds like you're creating more esters. Isn't that the case there?
Yeah, but it's a chemical activity as opposed to a yeast activity. It is still partially yeast activity, but there's not that many fusels to work with, and it's a very, and at these temperatures it's a very slow process. So you can experience a little bit reduction in some of the fusel alcohols, but it's a pretty minor path. It's not going to contribute a lot of flavor, but you know that could be one aspect of the smoothing of the beer taste you can experience.
Getting rid of those hot and harsh alcohols.
Right.
Right.
I think it's more prevalent in an ale beer than in a lager beer because of the yeast activity aspect. But that's another process that can be going on.
Is this one of those things that happens though in something like a Doppelbock? Because in some of the Doppelbocks, you brew those, and a little bit of an ester in there is acceptable. Kind of some of those darker fruit esters, and I'm wondering if that's really that's a function of the malts, it's a function of the alcohols, and it's a function of perhaps some of this esterification of these fusel, since it's a higher alcohol lager, is kind of contributing to that and playing a role in that those kind of dark fruit esters you might get in a Doppelbock.
Yeah, well, a lot of the esters that you taste in Doppelbock are actually melanoidins.
Mm-hmm.
Melanoidins can have a lot of the same flavors and aromas as esters.
Mm-hmm.
So because you've got such a high protein content in a Doppelbock, and you've got some darker malts, and you may be doing a decoction, you may be doing a longer boil. That all of that encourages melanoidin formation, and that's where you got a lot of the stone fruit and dark fruit esters, and they're actually melanoidins that are formed during the boiling process.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were mentioning, let's go back to the polyphenol complexes, and one of the things I've noticed is if you leave a beer in a beer you see that looks brilliantly clear, you can put that in, it's already been lagering in a keg for a month or two, and then you bottle it. If you let that bottle sit for a year or two, you will find a layer of fine material on the bottom of the bottle.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's more of what you're talking about. It's that product that's dropping out over time, and the beer becomes smoother. The interesting thing is your the formation of the head, the bubbles become smaller in size, and the head retention seems to increase.
Yeah.
When you first pour one of these beers, this is one of the things I found with my first Scottish 60 Shilling. I brewed this thing and kegged it up, carbonated it, and when I poured it, giant bubbles, and the head just went away really quick, and I really didn't like the flavor of it. It was kind of rough. I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
And for some reason, instead of getting dumped, it got pushed to the back of the fridge. And like a year later, I'm like, what is that keg back there? And I dug it out and took a look at it, and I'm like, Scottish 60. Oh, yeah, this was horrible. Literally a year later, said, let me taste it before I dump it. And, I poured myself a little glass, and, instead of big bubbles, a tiny, tiny little fine bubbles formed a nice head on it, and the head lasted. It wouldn't go away. You drank the beer, and it was still sitting there like a slug of foam at the bottom. And it was a wonderful beer. I entered in a competition and, started getting first place. So that was the first time I had brewed the Scottish 60 and started getting first place awards with that. And, a beer that I thought was horrible. A year of cold conditioning made a world of difference in that beer.
Yeah, really dropped out the polyphenols.
Mm-hmm.
And those polyphenols and the large, another name for polyphenol is a tannin. Tannin is a big polyphenol. So you get those tannins in there from the darker malts that you're using as Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
And
roast barley or a black malt of some kind highly kiln malt will add to that, and that kind of powdery stuff is dropping out, huh?
Yeah, and those particles, early in the beer's life, they're serving as carbonation nucleation sites. I mean, when you pour, the CO2 starts coming out of solution around those particles, and then you get a lot of foaming right away, and because you have this particulate matter in the foam, it encourages rapid, rupture and coalescence of the bubbles, and that's why the head fell so fast.
Mm-hmm.
With the year of cold conditioning going, all those particulates settled out to the bottom, and now you didn't have those nucleation sites for the foam, you know, to dissipate on. I mean, that's why it really stuck around. So, yeah, lager brewers will I'm sure they'll notice better head retention with time in their beers for that very reason.
And like we're saying, that applies with ales too, because the Scottish was obviously an ale, but it really improved based on the lagering and that chance to cold condition, let things settle out. And I'm sure if it had some sort of contamination in there, it would have just gotten worse. So if you have a beer that's contaminated and you're getting no head retention and gassy big bubbles, No. You know, this isn't going to do it for you. But if you had clean beer and there tends to be a lot of these polyphenols in suspension, this is a great way to clear it up. Tell you what, why don't we take a short break? And when we come back, why don't we wrap up our discussion of lagering and aging? And maybe we should cover, kind of aging a high alcohol beer, see how that goes. And then some listener questions back after this.
Your carboy cap on.
This is Brew Strong.
We'll be right back.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. And Seven Bridges has the best selection in the world. Everything is a click away at breworganic.com. Join the mailing list for special deals and regular updates about new products and specials. They have been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for almost 12 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. Check out their huge 11th annual summer sale. Everything organic is on sale until July 15th. Save 10 to 50% on all organic malts, hops, adjuncts, spices, and green coffee for home roasting. Shop early for the best selection and best deals. Seven Bridges is the host and promoter of the National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Take the challenge this fall for a chance to win great prizes, including a hands-on brewing experience at an organic brewery. Seven Bridges. Visit today at breworganic.com.
In the past year, the Brewing Network has been able to add two new shows, expand our studio capabilities and quality, and bring more beer information home to you than ever before. In no small part, this is due to subscribers like you. Thank you from all of us at the Brewing Network. Without your monthly support of any denomination, we could not bring you the very best in live beer radio like Can You Brew It?, Brew Strong, and The Sunday Session. Haven't signed up yet? Join your fellow brewers in the BN Army. Sign up today at thebrewingnetwork.com for a recurring donation as little as $2 a month. Besides all the great live radio you'll support, every subscriber is automatically entered in monthly raffles for amazing brew gear like a conical fermenter, a temperature control system, or your own draft setup. Become a part of the BN Army today.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're talking lagering and aging of beers to improve them, right? Make that beer a better beer than it was when it started that process. Of course, you have to have a good beer going into the lagering process or aging process, and then maybe it refines some of the character to it and improves it. Now,
yeah.
We're talking mainly lagers, but you can lager an ale, or you can age and condition ale. So what happens with ales? Let's say you have you have a barley wine or a high alcohol beer, and you want to age that thing for a period of time, right? You want to what's going on there? What happens when we age it? And what are we talking about aging? We're talking about room temperature, cold temperatures. What's the dealio there?
Yeah, well, it all depends on the kind of aging that your beer needs. You know, if your barley wine is a good example, because that's one that, you know, people have traditionally left in the fermenter for a year, or, you know, or racked it to a secondary fermenter to get it off the prime yeast cake and let that sit for a year before they would bottle it, before they'd start drinking it. Well, really, it's quality in equals quality out. And all the same principles we talked about when brewing with lager yeast and getting a good fermentation of that lager apply to ales and strong ales, where you want to encourage the yeast to not produce as many byproducts up front and then encourage them to clean up those byproducts at the end of fermentation. That's how you get the cleanest tasting beer. And now with an ale yeast, and particularly a barley wine, you are going to get a lot of ester formation, and that's okay. That's part of the character of the beer. What you don't want are the fusel alcohols, and you don't want diacetyl, or at least not lots of diacetyl. You don't want much DMS, because these things don't go with the style. The DMS is not going to go away. That's something that the yeast do not take care of for you. They'll take care of diacetyl if you give them enough time. So it's your yeast will take care of these organic kind of flavors, and warm conditioning will take care of those yeast organic type flavors. The cold conditioning, whether you do it to a lager or an ale, is going to take care of your clarification issues and help you deal with polyphenol harshness that may be present in the beer. Mm-hmm. So to age a high alcohol beer, let's assume that the yeast were under more stress during that fermentation due to, maybe inadequate pitching levels, maybe due to the higher alcohol content, The yeast are going to produce more byproducts during that fermentation. So they may need a longer warm maturation time to clean up what it could clean up. And then you're going to want a nice cold conditioning time to encourage the clarification.
And so we're also, in a way, developing some flavors in an ale, like a high-alcohol ale, like a barley wine, right?
Right.
Part of the conditioning. You know, one thing I had heard in the past is that for winemakers, you know, they had, you know, kind of perfected temperature control. They wanted to have, you know, a flawless cellar, you know, at, let's say, 50 Fahrenheit, 10 C, or, you know, where whatever they're cellaring their beer, their wines at. And they kept it, you know, perfectly steady because they didn't want anything to interfere with the wine. And what they discovered was a perfectly steady temperature actually does not help the wine develop. It was actually micro fluctuations in temperature, you know,
right.
the temperature
getting
shifting
the wine to breathe.
By a degree or so or less actually helps the, you know, the wine develop. And I think, you know, something as similar is true on beer, though I'm not really sure why, since you know, we're using sealed containers. Certainly in a you know, oak vat or something like that, you could see some of that development, but not necessarily in in a sealed bottle. But what do you think of that? Is there some truth to that, that the fluctuation in temperature has some impact on a beer?
Well, I think so. I the fluctuation in temperature would certainly it would drive the yeast to, you know, increase or decrease activity, whatever activity they're in. I think also, I think we got to look at, you know, what kind of reactions are possible in the beer. I don't know that the, I'm inclined to believe, Jamil, that a lot of the changes that you experience with extended aging of a strong ale have to do with some oxidation character occurring, and you're getting some oxidation
of alcohols and
from the melanoidin contents, because there's an equilibrium going on there. You have polyphenols interacting in those reactions. You get polyphenols settling out. You would get more melanoidin development, more Maillard reactions going on slowly, but still occurring in a warm or a 15 C, 60 degree temperature environment. And fluctuating those temperatures could cause different reactions to occur, different melanoidins to form, different oxidation reactions to occur, and get some variety going in there.
Well, that's why, if you get beers that are oxidized in a certain way, for example, you get a commercial beer and you can tell that it's oxidized from, the caramel malt kind of character that comes on. It comes on much stronger and it develops this huge kind of oxidized caramel character. And I think that's what you're talking about with the Maillard reactions, kind of lending to that. And sometimes people go, oh, no, that, they don't realize that it's actually, an oxidation character.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say that all adds to the complexity of a strong ale.
Sure. But in a American pale ale, probably not such a great thing.
No, you don't have enough other flavors to bounce that off of, for it to blend with. It just kind of sticks out.
Right. And what about hops? Now, hops themselves, they're going to, the hop bitterness will actually decline significantly in, let's say, 6 months. I've heard that your IBUs can drop in half within the first 6 months.
Right. Again, that's due to polyphenols, because when they measure IBUs, hop polyphenols have a lot to do with them, that measurement, because IBUs, like beer color, are measured by absorption. And they do, you know, they do some solvent extraction to try to isolate the hop compounds for that absorption measurement. But again, hop polyphenols, they have a, play a large role in that. And with time, these polyphenols complex fall out of solution. A lot of alpha acids, you know, are sticking to yeast. So as the yeast flocculates and continues to drop out of solution, it will also take away some bitterness. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a couple of mechanisms where your hop IBUs and the perceived bitterness in that beer is going to decrease with time.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about one of the questions that's come in on the chat is hop alpha acids to beta acids. Now, or hop alpha acids compared to beta acids and oxidation of one or the other. But once those are isomerized, does that really occur? Does the oxidation of those alpha or beta compounds occur? Or once they're isomerized, are they kind of you know, locked in a way?
I'm pretty sure that isomerized alpha acids can and do degrade. They also will break down because it's isomerization is, you know, is a twisting of the chemical form, and so there can be an equilibrium of, you know, twisted, untwisted, and so yeah, there can be degradation of isomerized alpha acids into an unisomerized, and though there's no reason those, you know, because we're talking about the same chemical structure, there's no reason that those alpha acids can't oxidize. And the oxidized form of alpha acid is not bitter. The oxidized form of beta acid is bitter. And if you've got melanoidins, you know, in the beer and polyphenols, there you have oxygen contributors for oxidation reactions of beta acids. So there's going to be that, you know, that chemical equilibrium going on too. Going to be a, you know, it's going to be a subtle, you know, small process going on, but it will occur. So yeah, that's there's that avenue for, you know, both a decrease in alpha bitterness and a slight increase in beta bitterness.
And all right, so I think you know, that's a pretty good rundown of what lagering is and aging, what might be expected. Let's see. You want to kind of recap for us what would be the things for people to take away as far as you know, next time they're getting ready to lager or age a beer. What's the important points to remember?
Well, I think the important points are to separate the two processes, fermentation and lagering. Fermentation is all about cleaning up, you know, yeast character, and lagering is the aging is all about cleaning up the polyphenol character. And as we discussed, there are also oxidation reactions that will occur over time, and you know, understanding how, you know, where those are going to come in. But you want to finish that fermentation before you cold condition, before you cold age that beer, because the cold conditioning won't clean up diacetyl or acetaldehyde. It won't really clean up fusels very much. So you want to have a good fermentation up front to control those. Now, what lagering is really good at is clarifying the beer and reducing polyphenol harshness. You will also see some brightening or some clarifying of the beer palate and the flavors from clearing these polyphenols from the beer. You'll have less of a green beer character after a lagering period. It'll be a more polished beer. And frankly, you know, going back to our filtering show last time, you know, if you filter a beer and you know, do put it through a fine filter where you can, you know, take out some of these polyphenols and so on, you can clean up the beer that way and clean, you know, getting some more of the yeast out by filtering than you would from, say, an equivalent 3-month lagering period. you can achieve the same kind of flavors, and Mike remarked on that. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to keep in mind. There's that trade-off between, you know, cold conditioning or filtering to achieve a more finished beer profile, a more refined beer character.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think that's a wrap then on lagering. I think you've done a spectacular job as always in educating us about the finer points and the science behind lagering and why you do it and why you'd find that to be something you want to do probably on just about every beer. You know, I think every beer can benefit from some sort of cold conditioning period or even just aging period where you let some of these things settle out. Or if you're, filter, like on one of our other shows, filtering will kind of accelerate things for you. But it's a good opportunity to kind of mellow out the flavors and let things kind of marry and improve. I always find that all my beers, I want to let them have a conditioning period as well.
Yeah, I can see, Jamil, we're going to have to cover cask conditioning at some point to kind of counter this show.
Right. There are just a million topics we got to cover and also a little time. But, 20 years from now, we'll still be sitting here covering topic after topic and hopefully knocking out as many as I can. Until that time, make sure you're hitting the Brewing Network site, thebrewingnetwork.com. Visit the store. You can pick up John's seminal work on how to brew, and you can pick up a copy of Brewing Classic Styles, some shirts, hats, all that good stuff. Yeah, you can get it at the Brewing Network, help support the Brewing Network, or donate and get automatically entered in that raffle. Don't forget, at the conference, you don't have to be there, but you can win a Moore Beer sculpture at the National Homebrew Competition. And it'll be a great time. We're all going to be there and have a wonderful time at the BN party. Until then, brew strong.
Brew strong, everybody.